We spoke last time about the gospel reading and how it shows that speaking in the truth in love is the work of God. This Sunday I want to look at the gospel reading again that we've just heard in the light of what it reveals to us about what we can expect when we do speak the truth. Because as we noted last time, speaking the truth in love is hard work. Sometimes it's hard work because we have to be careful. We have to think carefully about what we say, how we say it, so that it will be well received. But at other times, it's hard work because the world can't handle the truth. And that's more the case here. So Jesus and his disciples were going along, and they encountered this man who was born blind from birth. And Jesus' disciples ask him, "Rabbi, teacher, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" The basic understanding was that that was around at the time about deformities like this, where a man was born without sight, without the ability to see, was that obviously these things were not the will of God. And so since God can't do evil or will evil, this must be the result of somebody's sin. It must be a kind of punishment. Maybe it's his parents' sin, or maybe it's his sin in the womb somehow he sinned. And that was, this was kind of the prevailing theological opinion that everybody had about this kind of situation at this point in time. And this is normal. Everywhere we go, every society that you're in, every culture that known to humanity, we try and make sense of the world, and society generally comes up with answers. Some of those answers are true, some of them are less true. And in this case, Jesus addresses this with his disciples, and he says, neither this man nor his parents sinned. That's not why he was born blind. He was born blind so that the work of God might be revealed in him. This kind of false binary that they were looking at, he says, nope, neither of those things. It's a third thing that nobody's considered yet. And that's one of the problems that we encounter as we, you know, absorb from our society all of the answers and thought and ideas and ways of looking at things that we receive from it. Very often we don't think in anything other than those terms. This seems to present us with a very clear either or, and that's it, done. It's either this or it's that. So it's one or the other of those conclusions, and we're done. What Jesus reveals to us is that that's not always adequate. The tools that we have received from our society and from our culture that shape the way that we view the world are very often not complete. And in this case, they weren't complete. This man was born blind so that the work of God might be revealed in him. Jesus goes on, I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. Interesting, just side note, a lot of the gospel readings that are given to us at this point talk about light, talk about illumination, because this is the post-Paschal season. Pascha is the time without parallel for baptism. And Christians have always seen baptism as illumination. Baptism reveals to us, it illumines us, it reveals to us the world as it truly is. Not simply something that is dying and corrupt and hopeless and where everything is just grinding, it grinds you down until you die, but as something beautiful, as something that is infused even in its worst and most hideous elements with the grace and the love of God. When Jesus had said these things, he spat on the ground and made clay with the saliva, and he anointed the eyes of the man blind, of the blind man with the clay. And he said to him, "Go wash in the pool of Siloam," which is translated sent. And he went and washed and came back seeing. Again, another sort of side note here. Fascinating to see our Lord spitting in the dust, taking that dust and putting it on the eyes of the man. This is a work of creation. Just as God created man from the dust of the earth, so Jesus is here creating new eyes, new seeing eyes for this man. So it really is work. No question about that. This becomes important later on in the story. But as Jesus says, this is the work of God. The work of God is to illumine us, to help us to see things as they really are. And he sends him to go and wash, and he obeys. And in that obedience, his sight is restored to him. He opens his eyes, and for the first time in his entire life, he sees the world around him. Therefore, the neighbors and those who had previously seen that he was blind said, "Is not this he who sat and begged?" Some said, "This is he." Others said, "He looks like him." He said, "I am he." Here's another thing that we will often encounter as we are speaking the truth. People who have no experience of what we are speaking about will often not understand. People who, in this case, these people had no category for this person. I can kind of understand, because I often, when I see people in a different context, in a different place where I don't expect to see them, I don't recognize them. Like I expect to, that may be just me, but I think it's more than just me. Probably I'm more liable to it than other people. My wife is smiling at me. But I think it is a human thing. We tend to see people in a context and expect to see that again and again. And in this case, they can see this guy. He looks like the guy who was born blind, but he's seeing, so he can't possibly be the same guy. He must maybe just look like him. And we come up with alternative explanations, which don't actually explain, they obscure. Again, I'm reminded of that, I think I've shared this before, but I'll share it again. There's this wonderful, beautiful film of Gods and Men, which talks about the a group of Franciscan monks in Algeria who were facing death because they were and they had devoted their lives as monks to serving the community, but radical Muslim militants had come in and captured them, and they knew they were going to die. And a lot of the film revolves around them facing death, and eventually all of them spoiler alert, all of them are taken away and shot, except for one who hides under the bed, and I think there was one other survivor. In the movie, there's only the one survivor. And they talk to the survivor about the movie after it had happened. And the survivor said, yeah, they actually got it pretty much right, except they kind of overplayed the concern about dying. Because they're monks. They've given up their lives already. They didn't. But you know, he said that they have to have some drama. So it's not a natural for them to play that up a bit. And then what really struck me, with sort of in the light of this movie, beautiful movie, and this comment, was some of the internet response to this movie, where there were people on the internet saying, "Oh yeah, totally implausible. This no one could possibly be so calm. No people could actually be so calm in the face of death." And that's kind of like this. The internet commentator had no context for a life of holiness that has been dedicated to God, where you've actually already laid down your life. No clue, no sense, no understanding of that. And so, of course, he's just like, well, no, it couldn't possibly be. So, again, this is the kind of thing that we will encounter. So, he said, no, I'm he. Therefore, they said to him, how were your eyes opened? And he answered and said, a man called Jesus made clay and anointed my eyes and said to me, go and wash in the pool of Siloam. So I went and I washed and I received sight. And it's interesting here, the next thing that happens here, then they said to him, where is he? He said, I don't know. And I don't know, for me, this strikes me as, what's the relevance of this question? Here, they're encountering someone who has been born blind, whom they've known from birth. These are neighbors. They've known him from birth. And now all of a sudden, he sees. And their question is, well, where is this guy? Does it matter? Does it matter that they can't see him? Does it matter that they haven't seen the miracle itself? The reality, the end result of the miracle is standing right there in front of them. So often people are obsessed with, well, I want to see God. Where is he? I don't see him. Look at what he is doing. Look at his works. God is at work all the time. When St. Athanasius is writing his famous work on the Incarnation, he notes that all of the changes that are happening to people who lived lives where they were enslaved to sin, are now living lives of holiness and purity. And he says, these are not the works of someone who is dead. Someone who is dead can't change people's lives. They're dead. Someone who is dead can't heal people. Someone who is dead can't do the miraculous, amazing things that Jesus is doing now. Where he is irrelevant. If you want to know, he's everywhere present and filling all things. But his work is evident. It's right there in front of you. They brought him who was formerly blind to the Pharisees. Now it was a Sabbath when Jesus had made the clay and opened his eyes. And then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. He said to them, he put clay in my eyes, and I washed, and I see. Therefore, so here, it's fascinating to see what the Pharisees seize upon. Put clay in my eyes, I washed, and I see. What of those actions would strike you as possibly the most significant? Well, maybe the fact that he sees? But no, not to the Pharisees. Therefore, and you know, as they're analyzing it, they focus in on it's the Sabbath. This man did work on the Sabbath. And this, again, is something that we'll encounter as we speak the truth. People will analyze the wrong thing. They seize upon and focus on the most trivial and least important things, when the most important thing is staring them right in the face. Some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others, you know, were less obtuse, I guess. They said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. So they said to the blind man again, what do you say about him because he opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet. And what if, and one of the things that is important to understand about us as we speak the truth. We're not perfect. We don't know everything. We're speaking the truth in love as best we can, as is this man. So he says, to the best of his understanding, you know, he hasn't at this point understood that Jesus is the Messiah or that Jesus is God. He simply understands that Jesus is a prophet. So he's speaking the truth in love, and he's speaking what he knows to be true. And at this point, the most that he knows is that Jesus must be one of the prophets, because this is the sort of thing that a prophet would do, this kind of miracle. And so he simply says. And this, I think, speaks to us as we are sometimes worried about our ability to speak the truth, our ability to say what is before us. It's like, no, you, what we need to do is speak the truth as we know and as we understand it. Be faithful to it and express it faithfully. And then as we understand more, as the blind man will understand more later on in the story, we can say more, we can understand more, we can refine what we said. Just because we've said something doesn't mean we have to stick to that and that alone. Oh, he's just a prophet. No, as you see later, he is he's speaking what he knows. But the Jews didn't believe concerning him that he had been blind and received his sight until they recalled the parents of him who had received his sight. And they asked them, saying, is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, we know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but by what means he now sees, we do not know, or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, he is of age. Ask him. Here is another thing that we will encounter. As we speak the truth is scary. People are scary. People will be afraid of the truth as we speak it. People to whom we are speaking will be motivated and controlled by fear. It's a scary thing to think about what other people will think about us. It's a scary thing to think about how the truth may, if we accept it as truth, may change our lives. And so people will back off. My suggestion here is just be aware of this. Be compassionate. Understand that this is what people are facing. Not only do they not always have a context for what we are saying and how to understand what we are saying, the experience that we are relating to them of Jesus, but they also don't necessarily want to believe because it's a scary thing. So they called again the man who was blind and said to him, "Give glory, God, glory to God." This is a solemn oath. "We know this man is a sinner." Again, meet this all the time. People, they know. This is what they are absolutely sure of. This is their starting point. And their starting point is not going to get them anywhere. "We know that this man is a sinner." He answered them, "Whether he's a sinner or not, I do not know." So I love this. The blind man is amazing. Just as somebody who is speaking the truth in love, he is he's not afraid. And he challenges them. You know, "Whether he's a sinner, I don't know." I mean, even there was a division amongst them about the Pharisees about whether or not he was a sinner, right? So that's something I don't know. "One thing I do know, I was blind, now I see." So again, here, it's important for us to speak of what we know. That's what the apostle says. We speak of that which we know, that which we have seen, that we have tasted, which our hands have handled concerning the word of life. This we declare to you. And he's speaking of what he knows. Then they said to him again, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" Said that already. Told you. You didn't listen before. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples? They reviled him and said, "You are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciples. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from." And again, this is also something we'll encounter. People don't want to go beyond what they know. For all our wonderful highfalutin talk about being lifelong learners, we actually don't really want to spend our life learning. We want to know. And then, okay, we know it, we've settled it. Okay, now I don't have to learn anymore. Because learning is hard work. Learning is challenging. And these people don't want to learn. We know Moses. Don't know anything about this guy. Don't want to know anything about this guy. And the man answered them and says to them, "Why, this is a marvelous thing. You don't know where he is from, yet he's opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." One of the things about speaking and just talking and dialoguing with people, I find very often that as I'm talking with somebody, I'm also working through what I'm talking about in my head. And sometimes as we're doing that, it's like things will occur to us that didn't occur before. It seems to me like this is what's happening here. That this man, as he's working through it, he's like, wait a second. We know a few things here. Okay, if you're talking about what you know, we know that God doesn't listen to sinners. And we know that if anybody does worship God and does his will, that he hears him. So wait a second, he can't be a sinner. He's got to be somebody who is a follower of God. Only somebody who follows God and does his will could do something like this. And since the world began, nobody's ever opened the eyes of somebody who was born blind. This guy has to be from God. If he wasn't, he could do nothing. And they answer and say to him, "You are completely born in sin, and you are teaching us." And they threw him out. What's happening here? They don't want to listen. They don't want to know. They feel themselves to be the superior. There's no way they should possibly be listening to this person who's obviously inferior. The reason he's inferior is because he was born blind. Therefore, he must have been born in sin, whether it was his sin or his parents' sin. That much they know. And so, therefore, they can't possibly listen to him, and they throw him out. this is exactly what we began with. The basic societal understanding of things, which is wrong. Because it's formulated to cover the basis of things that usually happen. But this is not something that usually happens. You don't usually get somebody who has been blind from birth receiving their sight. And it doesn't cover it. And in falling back on it, because they're arrogant and afraid and don't want to learn, they are falling back into ignorance, into blindness. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And when he found him, he said to him, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" He answered and said, "Who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you." Then he said, "Lord, I believe," and he worshipped him. It's informative to look at where the various prescribed gospel readings end. The one we just heard ends here. Jesus actually goes on and says, "For judgment I have come into the world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind." Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, "Are we blind also?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say we see, therefore your sin remains." The conclusion, as John concludes this particular narrative, is that if we reject Christ, if we reject his words, if we reject his works, we're blind. And if we go on, if we go further and claim, like the Pharisees were doing, to be sighted, to have sight, then there's no forgiveness for sins. There's no way out of that. But interestingly, as I say, that's not where the church ends the reading here. We're in the Paschal season. The focus here is not on judgment. The focus here is on illumination. And here, this last interaction between Christ and the blind man, Christ hears that he's been thrown out. This is, being thrown out of the synagogue was something horrible. Cutting a Jew off completely from his God. And so Jesus comes to him and says, "Do you believe in the Son of God?" And of course the blind man is open to him, is open to hearing what he has to say. He wants to learn. "Who is he, Lord?" he says. "Tell me who he is so that I may worship him." And Jesus says to him, "You've seen him, and the one who's speaking to you is he." I love that because it connects the two things. He never saw Jesus before. He hadn't ever seen his face because he was blind. But he'd heard his voice. He recognized him from his voice. And Jesus puts those two things together. And he says, "I am he." And as the experiences that we have of God, whether seen or unseen, whether heard or unheard, we have some knowledge, some experience of God. We have experienced his work in our lives. And God is always revealing himself to us, putting the pieces together for us so that we can recognize him, so that we can know him, so that we can worship him. And where the church ends the reading is when the blind man professes his belief. Lord, I see. Lord, I believe. Lord, I understand. And his response in all this is to worship him, which needs to be our response. So let's worship. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, now and ever, and unto ages of ages.